Our Canadians headed home with a bronze medal from the FIBA World Cup, the best ever finish at the World Cup, clinching an Olympic berth next year in Paris. Lots to celebrate around this team and their ceiling, which continues to rise. And we've been excited to be a part of this story the last couple of weeks, and someone that's been there for a very, very long time helping build Canada up to this point is joining us next. Our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Michael Bartlett, Canadian basketball CEO. Congratulations.
Yes, indeed.
On an incredible run at the FIBA World Cup, and welcome back. I know it's been a little bit of a journey to get back home, but we're glad to have you on the radio, and congrats on the success.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, Ailish and Jesse. Yeah, it was fun coming through customs last night. If they asked if there was anything to declare, I said, yeah, one precious medal.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, was there, I don't know what time you landed at, but sometimes there's a little welcoming committee. Did anything special happen at the airport with the medals?
Yeah, I know a lot of the guys came through on different flights, so there was a good contingent for them. I came through solo, jumped in a car, and headed straight home to Stratford, and it was great to see the family last night.
Well, congratulations again. Just an amazing performance by the men's team over in Indonesia and then Philippines. Like, when the final buzzer sounded, what were the emotions that were
going
through?
Not the one to push it OT.
Yeah. Well, we can get your thoughts on that one, too. But when the game was officially over and you knew that Canada had won the bronze over a rival like the United States, what was going through your mind?
I'll actually say It was just pure joy, and because of the way that overtime went, we almost had kind of a 30 to 40 second head start of realizing, like, oh my goodness, like, this is happening. So being able to collect with the support staff that were all kind of filing out of the locker room and, you know, sharing hugs and enjoy with each other, it was actually very different than the game against Spain, which was tense right until the last minute. And or the last second, in fact, and the flood of relief that came from that one. That one was very emotional because we had punched our ticket to the Olympics. That really was our stated goal from day one. We did not ever and do not ever want to play in a last minute qualifying tournament. Canada deserves better. Our program deserves better. So then counter that to the bronze game. It was just pure elation and joy and, you know, squashing the giant of the U.S. in the process. It just adds another moment for Canada, another moment for the program, and we were just thrilled.
Yeah, it's always nice to beat the Americans, especially now that they all want to bring their superstars over. I think you started
the
Avengers maybe headed to Paris. But that moment, you celebrate, you mentioned it, you kind of got the first monkey off the back earlier in the tournament, beating Spain and clinching. How much of a relief almost, or how much of a clear head did the guys have for the rest of the tournament, knowing that one goal had been accomplished and they really only had one left, and that was to at least medal and at least get there on the podium?
Yeah, I think, you know, it sunk in for all of them that part one and the one that we talked about from the beginning. You know, I think back to a meeting that we had in Las Vegas with the players shortly after the crushing defeat against the Czechs in Victoria, when we reset the table and created this core strategy. At that time, we talked a lot about the path to Paris and what we have to do to qualify. And, you know, we've been talking about it ever since that day, about what qualifying for Paris needed to look like. But it was actually in that meeting that Melvin Ejim said, you know, while we're at it, you know, I agree we should qualify for Paris, but we should just go win a World Cup medal too. So, you know, the guys are wired differently. They're very focused. In fact, after that game against Spain, you know, there was no celebration, no party. We were all relieved. We go back into the team room afterwards, and they're just all playing Mario Kart, getting ready for the flight to Manila the next day, right? So they were just like, okay, check, done, moving on. And they were very focused throughout the entire tournament, and they were so excited to get a chance to play the U.S., some of their teammates, some of their rivals in the league, and then to get that monkey off our back, too, with a big win against that program. It was just everything these guys had hoped for.
And they're not the only Canadian team to have success in the basketball program as part of Canada basketball. Like the 5-on-5 teams, so you tweeted, competed for a medal in 9 of 10 tournaments since October 2022. So in your role with Canada basketball, like, how best do you capitalize on the success that Canada basketball is currently undergoing? And with all the eyeballs that were on this tournament, like, what's the best way that you guys can capitalize on that?
Well, we've got a great opportunity to unify the country through this sport. You know, I was with Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment for a decade before joining Canada Basketball, and I saw firsthand what the Raptors championship did for the country. We've tried to take that baton. The Raptors and MLSE are great supporters of Canada Basketball, and we're trying to kind of take that baton and torch from them to unify Canada through winning. And we know we've got a real shot when we go into Paris, our men's and our women's 5-on-5 team, and, you know, most expectedly our women's 3x3 team will all compete for medals. We got a great note from David Shoemaker at the COC saying how excited he is to have basketball be a lead story for Canada in Paris. I think back to just a young person growing up myself, what the Olympics meant to me, how it shut down my household for 2 weeks every time that Canada took to the stage somewhere. And, you know, basketball was never a focal point of that story. I remember being on the living room floor when Ben Johnson won and being on the living room floor the next day when they took the medal away. Like, I remember those moments. I remember where I was when Sid scored the goal, when the women won soccer gold. There's so many Olympic moments that are iconic for the country. And when we think about what basketball can be for the country in this Olympics and then coming up in LA 28, this is just the beginning. And, you know, brands certainly that want to jump on board with us, it's my job certainly to make sure that we have brands that partner with us so that we can invest back in basketball and in the winning and in the growth of the game. This is a great time to get on board because we've got a real shot to unify the country and do something on the world stage.
Yeah, Canada Basketball is no longer just a fun story, right? There's more expectations now. There's an Olympic gold medal, silver medal, bronze medal on the table. There's continuing to raise the ceiling. And I wonder for you, with this Olympic berth, with the FIBA World Cup medal, and with some of the biggest names in basketball going to be on your team, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has really, you know, he's been someone we've followed, but I think he's a global name now. Hopefully Jamal Murray is a global name that people will recognize and more now, of course, Dylan Brooks. But I wonder for you how this changes expectations, how you continue goal setting to not just show up, but to medal and to continue to grow this program specifically next year at the Paris Olympics.
Well, and, you know, you use the word change, Ailish. It doesn't actually change the expectation at all. For the last 24 months, our ambition and expectation has been just this, to be a podium team each and every time we compete internationally. And that's our men's, our women's, our 3x3, all the age group teams. That's what we expect of ourselves. So the expectations don't change. I think maybe Canada, more of Canada, wakes up to the fact that we have this expectation of ourselves and they should share in that expectation of us. Ultimately, the promise that we're making to our athletes too is when they compete on the global stage for Canada, it's an opportunity for us and them to make them household names across the world. And I think, you know, that promise was kept for Shai and Dylan and Lou and so many others. And now head coach Jordy Fernandez, like, these are names that, because of their investment and time in Canada basketball, these are now names that are known across the world. And quite frankly, probably names that are known more to Canadians too. And that's a promise that we make to our athletes, that we want to give them brag worthy experiences, but then also give them brand building opportunity too.
Yeah. We've heard so much about culture. And when we had Rowan Barrett on, that was one of the things that he really focused on. And I mean, it's no disrespect to the players who tried time and time again to have this level of success playing for Canada in these international tournaments, but obviously this is a high watermark in the last almost 100 years. So when did the culture shift? When did that begin, and how did you guys go about trying to change the culture with this team?
Well, I think, you know, we talk about ambition, and the board of Canada Basketball is filled of individuals and business leaders from across Canada, that many of them entrepreneurial, many of them see what basketball can be for this country. And they've given the organization permission to maybe act a little bigger than we are before we're even that size, and invest a little more than we have before we even have it. And, you know, ultimately winning is going to churn more opportunity for us to realize some of those financial gains and commercial opportunities so that we can invest back into the program. But it was kind of like the board took the handcuffs off of the organization and said, this is our time. We know this is the time now. We cannot be an organization that waits for the winning in order to spend like we're winning. So we have invested significantly more in our men's and women's and 3x3 programs over the course of the last few years, but we've invested it in the areas that are culture defining and competitive advantage defining. So that can be the length of training camp, the conditions of training camps, just think of the scrimmage games that we had before this Olympic run, playing against Germany and Spain, you know, before we compete against the best, we're practicing against the best. And these are all things that are culture defining because our athletes see this as an investment in their time. It's not just us asking them to put time into us. It's us investing in that opportunity for them too. And whether it be our women who finished fourth in the World Cup, our men who now have bronze, those athletes also go back into their professional season after those runs, having had a great physical and personal and psychological experience. So they end up having a better season as a result of it too. And that's part of the value prop that we're delivering as well.
Talking to Canadian basketball CEO Michael Bartlett. So we had Rowan Barrett on, as Jesse mentioned, last week, and he said this was right after clinching the Olympic berth, that he was already getting calls for sponsors, already getting scheduling for this next couple months in terms of games. So what happens now? Like, what do you guys focus on? Obviously, the on-court performance, but as you mentioned, trying to get this team ready for Paris. Is there scheduling? Is there big meetings that have to happen before, it's already around the corner, it feels like.
Yeah, certainly. And that's actually part of the benefit of being on the ground with the team for the last number of weeks. We now have a bit of a blessing of choice at this point. We have had so many invitations brought forward to us by other teams around the world that want to train and prep with us for exhibition games. So now it's now a matter of us deciding what we want our prep to look like. We're having the same conversations with our women's program. We anticipate that they will qualify out of the OQT in February. So we're trying to match those schedules, ultimately looking to do some really fun stuff with some games domestically and then flying over to Europe and playing some high quality prep games over in Europe too. So it's a planning process that we hope to have done no later than February, once we know the women have punched their ticket and have all those dominoes lined up. But it is a benefit of choice now. We don't really have to make too many calls. People are calling us. We're seeing it on the sponsor side. We're seeing it on the preparatory competition side. And I'll say it was really fun, the response that we got from, my counterparts, presidents of other federations from around the world, how excited they were for Canada basketball to achieve this, because they see it as good for the global game as well. Whether it be, a tough loss by France, their team president couldn't have been more gracious and excited for what this meant for our program. They've had their time. They know they'll have their time again. And they knew that, that loss to Canada, although, was a tough one for them, was good for the global game. And again, same with our friends in Spain and even our friends at the United States. They're very gracious along the way. And I think there's great opportunity for us to have some pre-Paris prep games with each of those nations, either home or away.
This team had a lot of NBA commitments, but there were some NBA players that decided to pass, whether it's for rest purposes or whatever that may be. Now having seen this team work through the grind of accomplishing what they accomplished, how are you guys going to navigate if there are players that took a pass on this tournament but maybe want to be a part of the Olympic run? Because I would imagine that could lead to some difficult decisions that may have to be made.
Yeah, certainly. Jesse, when we created the core strategy, the definition of core and being on the core wasn't handcuffed to necessarily playing in a window or in a competition. We recognize that certain, body injuries, rest, contracts sometimes can get in the way, but it's being part of the environment, the culture, the learning process and training camp, which was really definitive on whether or not you were committed to the core. So an athlete like Jamal Murray, Corey Joseph, Kevin Pangos, O'Shea Brissett, like they were all in our training camps through our windows, and while couldn't answer the call necessarily for this competition, they're still considered part of the core. So ultimately, Coach Jordy and Rowan, we'll have some difficult decisions to make. Those decisions will be based on our competitive outlook and, what we need to look like in order to be the best at the Olympics. But certainly the athletes that are in our core consideration, our core 16, continue to be the ones – that we're focused on. We know there will be others that are interested, and that's great. You know, this is, again, a program that has wanted people interested for a long time. So we're not discouraged by that. But ultimately, you know, those that have made the commitment to us, we believe very much in a two-way promise. They've made promises to us, and we've got to keep those promises to them. So there will certainly be some tough decisions. But I'll say this group of 12, they formed a team really quickly. Mm-hmm. They became brothers through experience, a shared experience together. And the most fun I had in the entire tournament was watching them, the 12 of them in the locker room together, just celebrate each other. And in fact, I don't know, I think Kelly referenced it in the post-game interview. The game goes to overtime off that dagger three. from Mikal Bridges. Was it Bridges? Yeah, I'm still blanking. and in the huddle, one of the players says, "Guys, how lucky are we to have five more minutes to be on the court together?" What a great response. And as soon as I heard that, somebody texted me, they're like, "Oh my God, that was gutting." I'm like, "No, we got this. I have no doubt that we have this." Because as soon as I heard the team say that to each other, I knew that this was something special.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. We've heard a lot. I think the FIBA broadcast helped us get a little bit closer to the team as well. They put the mic yeah. right in there, and we heard Fair a point. Lot from Jordy Fernandez. And mm-hmm. I think the decision to move on with him initially, with Nick Nurse moving off, we talked to Rowan Barrett. He said it was almost immediate, like, okay, let's get this guy in conversations. We really want to see what he can do. And it aged great. Clearly, the first couple months or even 2 months that he's had to build a team, to get this team together and create a culture that was already, you know, partially instilled, seemingly he was the right man for the job. I wonder what you make of Jordy's opportunity at the FIBA World Cup, how he became part of our conversation as somebody that motivated this team so quickly and seemed really well respected by the players already.
Yeah, he's he's one of us for sure. Like if you could, I think he changes. Yeah, he's a proud Spaniard, but he could hold the culture of a Canadian passport in his back pocket pretty easily. He's Canadian through and through in the way that he approaches life. I think ultimately he understands athletes. He understands the need of how to communicate and get the most out of athletes, how to be honest with them, but then also how to nurture them. He deflects often and calls Shea, you know, the greatest connector in the locker room. Jordy's an amazing connector. And whether that be with the frontline staff who's doing the laundry, to, you know, Rowan, to myself, to, you know, the star athlete, to, you know, Trey Bell Haynes, who's going to play, you know, 2-3 minutes a game. He knows how to connect with everybody. He was very, very, very focused on preparing this team to be their best. He's kind of a no ego amigo as well. Didn't really want to be in the limelight, but I think Canada should be very proud of their adopted son and Jordy. I know actually, happy accident, the Raptors are hosting Sacramento Kings out in Vancouver for an NBA preseason game. Jordy's going to get the loudest applause in the entire building, I think. He's certainly one of us, and proud to get to know him and become a friend of his over the last 6 weeks as well.
Last one for you, Michael, this morning. Appreciate your time, especially on the jet lag. Dylan Brooks, definitely a story that I think has won over a lot of Canadian hearts. His maybe narrative shift, the way that he put this team on his back, plays with a lot of pride, plays with a lot of energy and grit. Dylan Brooks, maybe even the reason that LeBron James and co. want to come to the Paris Olympics next year. I think he put them on notice a little bit, and they're going to get their team together. But the story of Dylan Brooks, I think we don't get the full perspective. We're not there on the ground. We're not, you know, sharing this story with him as close as you are. But him as a person, him as a player, like, it feels like we got a good one, and we should be really proud that he plays for Canada and not any other team.
Yeah, we certainly should. And, you know, there's a few instances. I'll say, like, the Philippines basketball culture loves the LA Lakers. Like, there's more Lakers jerseys than any other jersey outside of LA that I've ever seen. And they would routinely boo him, you know, the minute that he got the ball, the minute he was introduced. Mm-hmm. Hearing them cheer MVP for him at the end of the game was so amazing. Here's the take on Dylan and what the rest of the world didn't get a chance to see. First guy out of the locker room so that he can stand in the tunnel and do his personal, you know, high five with every guy as they come out to get ready. Leads the team out onto the court. You know, the first guy to be rallying the team and talking in the huddle and, you know, setting some defensive, you know, tidbits and suggestions for guys. Like, he's just all team. And the organizations and people that pour their positive energy into him, he gives it right back 200%. He was also the one, I think he had the most friends and family there. He was so proud of getting this opportunity and had friends come, to Jakarta and then also out to Manila. So it was just wonderful to see how he bled and wore the Canadian flag on his sleeve, his heart on his sleeve throughout the entire tournament. And I think Canada's got one to fall in love with for decades. For sure.
I can't wait to see how he follows it up at the Paris Olympics. It's been a really wonderful story being able to cover Canada's run at the FIBA World Cup. Congratulations again. Yeah, keep that bronze medal in sight because hopefully you can add another one next year to the podium in Paris. Thanks so much for coming on and congrats once again, Michael.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
That's Michael Bartlett, Canada Basketball CEO.
That was excellent.
And our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where we can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
You can tell why he's a CEO. There's some very eloquent and well-stated answers.
Yeah. No, that was awesome.
We're making jiu-jitsu bets in our spare time.
Really great insight about the players that might not be currently involved in the process, but maybe looking forward for Paris Olympics. I think that will be a lot of conversations about how they build this roster. But you have a lot of faces that we know will be there and will be a part of this moving forward. Canada's a young team, so that should be inspiring a lot of confidence for fans. Paris Olympics just around the corner. As we mentioned, LeBron James deciding that he's going to spearhead a bunch of American stars to come play at the Paris Olympics. That's the Dylan Brooks effect. He wants to go toe-to-toe with Canada's
Had to
villain.
Try and steal the headlines, eh?
Yeah.
Couldn't let Canada bask in the glow for like 3 days.
Right? We'll see you next year.
Yeah, I'm not concerned yet. I do think for Canada, like you got to take the best players available, especially now considering the U.S. is going to send that loaded team, and you would think other countries' teams are going to reload as best they can because Canada is clearly a threat now. And if Jamal Murray wants to play, which I believe he does by all accounts, then he has to be there. Andrew Wiggins is probably going to be the big one if he
Michael
decides
Bartlett
he wants to play.
Did not say Andrew Wiggins. He was mentioning names. No. He might have just missed it, but...
But Ben Mathurin should probably be there. And I do feel like there's, despite all the blood, sweat, and tears that this roster has put in to get them to where they need to go, you do have, I think, an obligation to the program as a whole to try and put the best result forward. And the best way to do that is have the best players.
Two things I really liked from that conversation. One was the idea that Canada now has another whole team, a story to follow at the Paris Olympics. Like, I love swimming and I love track. And sometimes I feel like that's all we really get from Canada at the Olympics, or at least coverage-wise, right? We know those stories of some of our incredible swimmers and incredible track athletes, but I know there's a lot of other Canadians that participate, but now you have Canada basketball being one of the lead stories. Like, they qualified after they haven't for 20-something years. They're coming in with global superstar names. I think it's going to be great for casual Canadian Olympic fans to have another entire storyline to follow and an exciting fresh one. And he mentioned not just this Canadian basketball team, but some of the other versions of Canada basketball being ready to go at Paris Olympics. And then secondly, the fact that now they can pick and choose. They're getting options from other teams and other countries that want to train with Canada. Like, Canada earned that opportunity to say, actually, we want to play a friendly with you. We want to train with you. You have some of the best caliber facilities and coaching that we want to partner with. And I think that that is such a blessing that Canada earned. Like, they were probably not the team that people wanted to pair up with or learn from for the last 20 years. And now they've come onto this global stage and they are in the driver's seat, so to say. So they can prepare themselves the best for the Paris Olympics. Couldn't have said the same, previously when they weren't a top tier opponent in the world. So not just winning in a medal that means something, it's all the things that go in behind the scenes, more fandom, more opportunities to train. And we're going to hear in the next couple of years, maybe 2 years, maybe 1 year, that basketball signups have grown in Canada, right? You see them at the Olympics. You saw them at the FIBA World Cup. And I know time was kind of not at the easiest for East Coast viewers. But if you have a kid that's going to watch the Paris Olympics, wow, I want to play basketball. Like, it's so easy to see that trickle effect. Like, I see it in women's hockey all the time. If you can see it, you can be it. I think we're going to see a lot more participation. I really hope so, because this is a really important moment for Canada and our country, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do at the Paris Olympics.
For sure. Very well said. And the first thing that I would do if I was Michael Bartlett as CEO is invite Latvia, Slovenia, Germany, all the hot shooting teams mm-hmm. into the Raptors practice facility to use the shooting
OVO
machine
board.
And just completely disrupt everything that they had working for them. Maybe make sure they use it 2 weeks before the Olympics next year so that they can get cold and just don't let Dylan Brooks give them any top secrets about it.
One free suggestion I would also have for Canada basketball is sell jerseys. Make them accessible, make the gear, the merch nicer and more accessible because I want to see us repping sweet Dylan Brooks jerseys come next year. It's hard to find anything Canada basketball. So boom, get the merch pumping because A, you make money, but B, you grow the fan base.
Hopefully Michael's still listening.
I'm sure he's listening. okay, let's shift one last time to the Blue Jays. Caitlin McGrath will join us, reporter at The Athletic. 10-4 loss to kick off what is the most important series of the season. We said it before. But good thing is they got another opportunity tonight with Hyunjin Ryu on the mound. A lot of people are feeling good about Hyunjin Ryu as of late. They got some anchor picks in for Awaken Rake as well. So we'll go through all that with Caitlin as the Blue Jays are just half a game up on Texas now for that wild card spot. Things can change real quick. So how do the Blue Jays stop the slide, and as John Schneider said last night, flush this one. Caitlin joins us after the break on the Fan Morning Show with Jesse and Ailish.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're looking for a turnaround, it's a Tuesday night, Looney Dogs, which should have double the attendance of last night, and a new opportunity for the Blue Jays to turn this around with Hyunjin Ryu on the mound. Let's bring in Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays reporter at The Athletic, who's coming on to chat about last night's disappointment. But, like, let's flip the script. Caitlin, we've had a little negativity this morning, the Bills, the Jets, the Jays. What can we find to be positive about this morning, Caitlin?
I mean, maybe it's the Looney Dogs. People really enjoy those.
I mean, I just love a good Looney Dog.
Caitlin knows her audience.
It brings good fans. Oh, yeah, here's the spin. It brings a lot of fans tonight, which they're going to need, as Kevin Kiermaier like pleaded for, and we didn't see last night. And maybe that just inspires a little bit of oomph or a little bit of extra mustard in their play tonight.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the crowd thing was weird yesterday. Like, I don't fully understand it. I think people are trying to come up for reasons on Twitter, like Monday Night Football. Like, I don't really buy that. Like, I don't think there's that many people needing to stay home and watch the Bills. So I don't know. Maybe it was just a weird Monday thing. People are still like settling into their routines, their back to school routines or something. But yeah, like, hopefully the crowd picks up maybe for the rest of the games, Wednesday, Thursday, especially.
Just, I think Blue Jays fans, after watching last night's game, it was a close one until the seventh inning, obviously. But I think there are some things that they just need to clean up. And it's more of a trend that we've seen this season when we really weren't supposed to see that. Like, this was supposed to be the attention to detail year. That was everything that they were talking about in spring training. But yet last night, I mean, you don't want to harp on it too much, but Chris Bassitt, you can't do that. But the third disengagement leads to a run. And then Kevin Kiermaier, who happens to be probably the Blue Jays' best base runner, but a very aggressive send, and that sort of sucked all the life that was in the building last night out of it and killed the momentum for the Blue Jays. But it just felt like another sloppy effort from the Blue Jays when they just cannot afford to have those kind of efforts at this point of the season.
Yeah, it's like the Chris Bassitt play was really weird because I thought that the Blue Jays in the early innings actually looked really sharp defensively, you know, his weird play notwithstanding. Like, I thought the defense like really came to play. They made some really nice double plays. Kevin Biggio stands out, but even the double play, the 3-6-1 double play.
Yeah, that was crazy. What a play.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I thought like the defense looked really good, and that's to me like a really good indicator, like, oh, the team's really engaged, like they're looking really good. And that's something that they have an edge on a lot of other teams, like their defense is really good. But yeah, that you know, the Kiermaier not scoring on that play, it's interesting because I think it did really suck the momentum out of like the crowd in the moment. I don't know that like baseball players like feel that as much. Like, I think that my sense was that they were okay with Sen, because it's like, well, you've got Kiermaier, who's like one of your best base runners or one of the best base runners, generally speaking, in baseball. And then you're kind of testing like a rookie's arm, right? It's like that guy's like first week in the major. So, I can see like both arguments where I can see like, you know what, you had Bo coming up, no one was out. You could have had a guy on first and third, just hold it and like let's build this. You should rely on Bo or Vlad being able to drive in that run. At the same time, I can see how you think like, well, it's Kiermaier, it's a rookie in left field, like let's test that arm, and it really didn't work out for them.
I feel like it's part, that's the macros or the micro. I feel in a macro perspective, like that has been sort of the issue with the team this year. Like for a team that is in a playoff spot, one thing that's blown me away from the fan base's perspective is just how negative everybody's been. Like their record is not bad, but if you go look at the message boards or you get the vibe of the team
on
Twitter,
look at the message boards,
I'm just saying,
Jesse,
it's all part of research, but it's like, just there's a prevailing thought that this team is just not good enough. Yet they have the best pitching in baseball and potentially one of the better bullpens in baseball. Like, why do you think that there is this belief out there that they just won't be able to get it done?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I steer clear of the comment section more than I usually do this year. I have thought about this a lot. I wrote about it a little bit. I think there's several reasons, and it's just kind of my own sort of theories, I guess. But one, I don't know that like great pitching excites people the way that like great offense does. I think that's probably like just going back to sort of the history of the Blue Jays, if you will. The sense is like the Blue Jays have always actually been more of an offensive team. This era, definitely been more offensive. You think back to like 2021 when they had basically the best offense in baseball, even last year as well, one of the best offenses. And then you think back to like 2015 team, where they just hit really, really well. And, you know, it's just been a thing very much lately where people get really excited about an offense and you can kind of rely on Toronto to have a good offense. And it's not been like that this year. And so I think that is driving sort of the disappointment, and some focal figures in that, you know, Vlad probably leading the way in terms of not having the season people wanted from him. But you could kind of go down the list, excluding a few guys. I think you exclude like Bo from that conversation. He's been great. I think Kiermaier has been really great. I think there's a lot of guys in the lineup who have done, well. Kevin Biggio was having a good year offensively. But I think that you talk about like some of the main guys and they're not giving you what you expected to get. And that feels like a drag, because it's like, well, if you have like Kikuchi pitching 7 scoreless innings, but they lose 1-0, like no one's getting that excited about a Kikuchi outing, right? Like I think, and that's happened several times this year, not necessarily losing 1-0, but just like having a great pitching performance. You know, Kevin Gausman, it's happened a number of times where they just don't score for him, and then you're kind of feeling like a wasted pitching performance. So I think that's a big thing. I'd also add that their performance, just generally speaking, against their own division, I feel like really sucked the air out of this team, because it felt so early on like the division was out of reach. Like you couldn't win a game against Boston in the first half. You were really getting smoked by the Orioles. You did sort of fine against the Yankees and the Rays, but overall your record against your own division was so bad, and that was a very frustrating thing, that I think that all the hope of winning the division felt kind of lost early on. And I think that's also led to disappointment, because no one's getting excited about being in a wild card spot, maybe because the like pain of last year's wild card game is still there too.
Well, the good thing is, Caitlin, they have 5 straight series against AL East teams to wrap this up. So looking ahead to that, they can rewrite that narrative. You're talking about good offensive teams, which is fun to cheer for. Well, the Texas Rangers are one of the best offensive teams in baseball. I know they race out to that hot start, and they were at the big league of the AL West, and then they certainly fell off for some reason. But they didn't look like the terrible team that we had been hoping that the Blue Jays could pounce on as of late. I mean, they dropped 16 of their last 23, but now they've won 3 straight. They are an offensive force. We saw that last night. Maybe do we underestimate the Rangers a little bit in terms of what they can show? And they're in the same position as the Blue Jays, fighting for a wild card spot. Those can be dangerous teams to play against.
Yeah, I think with the Rangers, you really don't want them to get any sort of momentum here, because they are a good team. They're a really good lineup. And the recipe for their success has been being able to really outscore other teams. And then their biggest weakness, which is their bullpen, doesn't really flare up very much because they have a big enough lead. So obviously that's what happened yesterday. And it felt like, yeah, if the Blue Jays kept it close, I think all bets were off in the late innings, because I do think the Blue Jays, in theory, had the edge over the bullpen. Didn't work out yesterday. You know, the Blue Jays bullpen gave up the grand slam and really put that game out of reach. So you go back at it today. But yeah, I think that the issue with the Rangers in this lull for them hasn't totally, I mean, obviously they haven't been scoring as much. They've come down to earth. I think their numbers with running and scoring position haven't been as good, but they were really like off the charts great in the first half. I think there's some kind of luck and batted ball luck that has not really gone their way quite as much as it was in the first half. It felt like in the first half, a lot more balls were just like dropping for them, whereas now they've kind of regressed back to the mean or the average. But that just means that they're not plating quite enough runs that can cover up for their bullpen, which really, really has been a huge reason for their downfall lately, just not being able to keep leads and hold leads and all that. So, you know, I think the Blue Jays still have a good chance to come back in this series because they should be able to keep it close. You know, you hope that their pitching can keep it close. And then, you know, I do think in the late innings, they should have the advantage in theory over the Rangers bullpen.
We'll see if they can get to Max Scherzer tonight against Hyunjin Ryu. And we spoke to David Murphy earlier in the show about Scherzer, so I want to talk a little bit about Ryu. And I got to put my hand up, Caitlin. I did not expect this version of Hyunjin Ryu this season coming back from Tommy John. In fact, I was surprised when people were just sort of penciling him in and saying, okay, it's okay if Manoa goes down to the minors or doesn't recover in any way because they have Hyunjin Ryu coming. I was like, well, the guy is 36 years of age and coming off Tommy John. Like, what can you really expect? And lo and behold, he's allowed 10 runs all season since he came back on August the 1st. Like, he has a 2.65 ERA, 1.06 whip. The guy has been that good for this team. Just what kind of a boon has that been for this Blue Jays team, who certainly needs every good start that it can get?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. I was the same way. I was pretty skeptical that it was going to work out. I realized at some point this season that he was going to come back because he was totally on track and stuff. But I remember a time where it was really up in the air whether he'd pitch again for the Blue Jays, because you never know how long it takes to get back from Tommy John, especially at his age, especially being the second Tommy John that he's undergone in his lifetime. So it has been probably close to, if not the best case scenario for the Blue Jays when it comes to Ryu, how effective he's been. You know, the Blue Jays are using him fairly carefully. He's really only gone 5 innings in most of his starts. I think they're not really pushing him too much, although I think if he was really, really rolling, maybe you go 6 with him, but I wouldn't see him being pushed any further than that. 5 seems to be where they're really comfortable with him going, and it's really worked out. He's looked great. He looked very vintage Ryu. It's nice to see, honestly. I think it's nice for him to have this, to close out at least this contract with kind of looking like his old self again and looking like the guy that the Blue Jays, you know, brought in to turn the page on the franchise essentially and move them from a rebuilding team to a contending team. And he did that. He's a big reason why they have been contending the last number of years. And he really was kind of the first domino to fall in that regard. And yeah, I think that it's been nice to see. It's just nice to like see a guy succeeding. And the rotation has really had his performance to thank, because like you said, you know, Manoa, there was a lot going on there, not getting the performance you want from him. And I think the Blue Jays, we saw their starting pitching depth really tested earlier in the year when they sent Manoa down in June. And, you know, you're using basically Trevor Richards as a starter, even though he's one of your better relievers at the time. And so that was not going to be a good situation if Ryu wasn't able to perform. So, yeah, Blue Jays definitely lucked out, but you know, they also put their faith in a guy that is deserved it. You know, he's had a great career and he's just come back and continued it.
chatting with Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. You mentioned Manoa. I actually wanted to ask you about that because yesterday our Sportsnet Ben Nicholson-Smith and Ben Wagner were talking a little bit about some updates on Alec Manoa and saying that there was maybe a performance-related demotion that really upset him and that he decided not to report. I just wonder if you have any more information or any indications that you've learned from being around the ballpark or talking to others about, you know, either the current status with Alec Manoa or maybe something we didn't know too in depth over the last month about what's been up with him.
Yeah, I mean, I've just kind of been hearing the same things that your guys have reported and talked about. And, you know, it's a strange situation, I guess I would say. It's not something that you hear about often. It's not something you see. It's definitely surprising. I mean, I think I would just say that it's been, you know, it's really unfortunate just in terms of Manoa kind of losing this year, essentially, or, you know, he did make 19 starts, I think, in the major leagues. And he, you know, some of those were not what we were expecting. Some of them were okay. Some of them were good. Some of them looked like, you know, he was making progress, especially after he came back. There was a handful of starts where it looked like, okay, this guy's making some improvements. And, you know, at the time, like when he got sent down the second time, it really did feel like a roster crunch situation that happens fairly often. I mean, it just happened this week where you talk about Jay Jackson, who has been a really great reliever for the Blue Jays as well. But Eric Swanson comes back and he's one of their guys. And you like what you've gotten from Bowden Francis lately because he gives you some length and then you can use other guys differently. And so these roster crunch situations do happen. And, you know, at the time, like we were just talking about, Ryu kind of deserved a shot and was pitching really well. And it seemed to be, for me, like fairly straightforward in terms of, you know, what a team would do in that moment. If you're just talking about, let's remove the names from it and just look at the ERAs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that at the time it just kind of made sense. It was like, well, Kikuchi was pitching really well and Gausman and Bassett are kind of your guys. And Barrios was pitching really well. And it would just like felt like the decision that had to be made. And I think that, you know, it's unfortunate that it maybe unfolded the way that it did, because I think there was probably a scenario where maybe not necessarily Manoa gets back into the rotation without an injury. I think it probably did need an injury, but, you know, if something had happened to the Blue Jays rotation, let's just say, you know, comebacker hit Kikuchi in the leg, or not that I want to hypothetically injure one of these guys, but just, you know, anything can happen in baseball and we've seen it, right? Like we've seen freak plays like that. And that would have put the Blue Jays in a really bad situation because Manoa really wasn't ready to step in. And so that didn't happen, but I think that would have been a really unfortunate situation. I mean, I guess in theory it still could, but he's obviously not in the mix anymore. It would be someone else, but yeah, I think that this is going to be a really interesting offseason, I think, to dive into what is next for these two players, or two parties, I should say.
100%. An important offseason for both the organization and for Alec Manoa, and hopefully they work in tandem on making that a happy one. Caitlin, appreciate you coming on today. Let's hope for a better result for the Blue Jays tonight, or at least more Looney Dogs sold than ever before. I will definitely chat with you soon, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
That's Caitlin McGrath, Blue Jays reporter at The Athletic. And we have a lot of hype for the Waken Rake today, although we blew it this week. So we should.
Well, last night was not our fault.
Yeah, well, I mean, yesterday was just a fiasco. So let's make today better.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Waken Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
Okay, we have a submission from Justin Cuthbert, who is currently delayed on the Madrid tarmac in his airplane. It says Astros run line. Just sending in across the globe.
Astros run line. Yeah, that's Verlander against J.P. Sears, who was incredible against the Blue Jays, obviously.
Yeah, that guy's a legend.
Who hasn't been incredible against the Blue Jays at some point.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean,
Let's keep reading. See, I just wanted to make sure he got his in.
Minus 140. Yeah.
Okay, so Eric from Burlington likes Cubs run line tonight and maybe even Cubs winning by at least two because using the line by Sam McKee, the Rockies have a stinky poo-poo pitching staff.
It's flexing. He had a pretty good start against the Jays, too.
Okay, morning, Jesse and Ailish. Hope you're doing well on a rainy Tuesday. Chris is taking his dad to the game. Have fun. Ryu over 3.5 strikeouts. We also have Corey from Port Hope saying Ryu over 3.5 strikeouts. Mm. We have Big E Eric in Burlington liking Braves on the run line, the Red Sox, Yankees under, and the Mets, Diamondbacks over. Dan from Peterborough, choo-choo all aboard the Biggio train.
Excuse me, that was just the Wayne train.
Yes, I love that. I miss Stewie. Choo-choo all aboard the Biggio train for a hit. Has stayed close to the same last time we bet him 7 hits in the last 9 games. TJ and Stovall has Scherzer over strikeouts. Well, we can't bet that. And then our beloved first family of the Fan Morning Show is back. Ron and Jules, you have to be there. Jules apparently can drive herself to school now, so it's the first time he's driving her.
Wow.
That makes my heart hurt. Mm-hmm. They're growing up. She'll take Bo Bichette over bases, and he'll take Aaron Judge to hit a home run in game one. There's 2 games in the Yankees-Red Sox today. Gary from Etobicoke likes Boston and the Yankees over in both of the games. That's a lot of submissions. I'll tell you mine, which will be over in the Cardinals and Orioles. That game will have a pitcher that has never pitched, John Means, and Adam Wainwright, who has an 8.19 ERA, and there's 2 good offenses there with the Orioles and the Cardinals. So I'm going to pick that. It's over 10.5. What are you doing?
I'm going with the San Diego Padres money line over the Dodgers. Now you might be thinking, well, the Dodgers are really good. Why would you do that? It's because Lance Lynn is on the mound and they acquired him from the Chicago White Sox. And in 4 starts since the deadline, he was electric. And then he has proceeded to go 3 earned runs on 10 hits, 7 earned runs, 8 earned runs. And that reverts back to his time with the White Sox when he allowed 8 runs on April the 6th, 8 runs on May the 31st. 7 runs on May the 10th. You get the picture. He's having a horrendous year, and the last 2 starts continued that trend. That's why I like the Padres to win on the money line against the Dodgers.
That's a bold one, and it's plus money. I'm going to make the executive's decision because Ron and Jules are always, always big supporters of the show. They took the summer off. Jules is now driving herself to work, to school, which makes me emotional. I think we should do Bo Bichette over bases. It's a good pick from Jules. But I also feel bad about Justin's Astros run line, so we could even add a 4th one. How about you just go with what your heart desires? Because Justin will be back soon, and I don't want his flight to be delayed. So
it's good karma to include it, I think.
Okay, well, let's just get spicy. You only live once. so he liked Astros. Was it on the run line?
Yeah, that's
I'll
right.
Load that up in there, and
yeah,
we have
Verlander on the hill.
Okay, so we've got over in the Cardinals and Baltimore Orioles. We've got Padres money line. We've got Bo Bichette over bases for our girl Jules. And then we're going to add in, if you'd like to, Justin's pick, which is Astros on the run line over Oakland. And that's plus 1456. Go big or go home, folks.
I like it, personally. I'm riding.
Okay, well, thanks for everyone. Great day. Great Tuesday. Enjoy the game tonight. Go Jays, go. Go Looney Dogs, go. Back tomorrow morning. Jesse and Ailish.
Can't wait.